Okay, the next matter is Traister versus Traister.
May I reserve standard rebuttal?
Again, this next matter is Traister versus Traister. Thank you.
May it please the court, opposing counsel, I'm Steve Philman. I represent the appellant, Mr. Traister, in this alimony and child support modification. There are numerous erroneous factual and legal conclusions of the trial court, and these are outlined in my brief. I obviously don't have time to address all of these issues in 10 minutes, but I shall attempt to cover at least three of these. First of all, I would note it was obvious that the trial court inappropriately applied an unprecedented type of fault-based analysis in denying modification of support obligations. The trial court spent an extraordinary amount of analysis on extraneous moral issues of fault that had no causal relationship to appellant's financial collapse. The trial court dwelled extensively on around 21...
Does it go to unclean hands, though?
The unclean hands part, I think, goes to the latter part of the case, Your Honor. Right, there are two issues. One issue is the trial court was trying to say that the appellant was at fault for his income collapsing because of some expenses he paid back in 2014 that maybe were questionable expenditures. The unclean hands doctrine goes to the latter part after the case was filed. At the very end, right before trial, the court was questioning a different set of expenses. And I am going to address that also, but right now what I'm talking about is the $21,000 back in 2013 when he was still current on all of his obligations. And the trial court obviously found those expenses morally offensive. However, it was erroneous and unprecedented for the court to attribute a fault-based analysis to deny the modification when those expenses had no causal connection to the appellant's change of financial circumstances.
Is there another way to look at that, though? Is it also an argument that what the court was saying was that your client did not meet his burden of proof to show that there had been a material change of circumstances since the original decree had been entered?
They could say that, Your Honor, but I mean, really, those expenses were irrelevant to the change of circumstances. And the reason I say that is the evidence showed that there was a 50% drop. He was a farmer. There was a 50% drop in grain prices to where the price he received for his grain at the time of trial was less than it cost to produce. So it didn't matter how many acres he farmed, he was going to lose money. And I just think it was absurdity to suggest that his financial circumstances were caused by anything other than the drop in grain prices. He was a highly leveraged farmer.
Excuse me, Mr. Philman. His monthly income at the time of the divorce was determined to be about $11,000 a month, right? How much of that was based on just farm income versus any of the other sales things that he did?
Well, it did include the sales income.
It did or did not? It did?
It did include the sales income. But the reality, the most shocking thing, if you look at the accountant's report and everything that we had expert accountant, it showed that his grain revenue dropped from around $1.4 million. It dropped by almost $800,000 in the crop year after the divorce, which just completely devastated him financially. And that the $21,000 had nothing to do with that. It's a drop in grain prices. And basically, he was in a situation where, so he had the best year ever, the year of the divorce. The crops were like $7 to $9 a bushel, and they plummeted. And as a result, because he took on so much debt in the divorce, it was inevitable that he was going to financially collapse. And so by the beginning of 2014, his bank was basically going to call his loans. He couldn't meet his obligations. He was $500,000 short because of the drop in grain prices. So if he had back that $21,000 of questionable expenditures, it wouldn't have made any difference. He still would have been $480,000 short. So for the court to apply a fault-based analysis on that, where it's basic textbook, there's no causation between his change in circumstances. So that's the first issue.
So in other words, you're saying if you took all that other stuff, the moral issue stuff out, all those expenses, whatever, the girlfriend and paying for her kids and so forth. If you took all that out and you just looked at his income sources and his ability to earn income, he was still farming, but a lot less acres, right?
Because yeah, even no matter how many acres he farmed.
But he was doing other things.
Yes. And I think that showed diligence on his part. He tried to transition into something that where he could make money. But there's simply no fault in anything he did financially during that period that caused his collapse. It was inevitable with the drop of grain prices and the $2 million of debt that he took on. There's just no way that anybody could have possibly done that. At the time that he spent that $21,000, he just had a record crop year. How was he to know the crop prices were going to collapse?
He knew he was going to lose at least one of the leases on some of the farm ground, though.
Yes, but like I said, the number of acres is kind of irrelevant, because by the time of trial, the grain prices were lower than the cost of production. So that's the cause of the change of circumstances. The next issue I'd like to address is that as far as the way income was calculated, the analysis of the trial court, the taxable income is totally inaccurate. And the reason being, you know, we had an accountant that matched the revenue and expenses to the crop year. The reason things were so off and had to be adjusted by the accountant was because there was $930,000 of crops that were produced before the divorce that were sold in 2013, that right after the divorce. It made it look like he made $418,000. When you back that out and make the adjustments, he really only made $30,000. And then also, there were enormous capital gains and depreciation recaptures when he was forced to liquidate. He had to sell his home, move into a tiny rental home. He ended up having to, sell all his equipment, and he had over $700,000 of tax liability as a result. Now, I'd also like to address the issue.
So did all of the equipment sales money go to the debt that he had previously?
I believe the record does show that he didn't receive the money from the equipment sale, except for he sold some pivots, and I think the testimony was that he had about $50,000 worth of cash that he was living on, because the Department of Revenue was...
I guess I'm just trying to figure out how he gets a $700,000 tax liability from the sale of this equipment. Is that the equipment and the land?
And the home and acreage. Basically, okay. What happened was he didn't own any farmland. He just had an acreage. But basically, they've been depreciating that throughout the marriage. He took the tax liabilities in the divorce, and so he had this enormous tax liability.
Didn't the record indicate, though, he wasn't really making any... Nobody had come and forced him to start making payments on that tax debt. He had the tax debt, but... He was not making
any payments
on it.
Yeah, and that's one of the factual errors of the trial court, because the record clearly showed that his bank accounts were being seized for taxes and that the IRS had just temporarily ceased collection activities. But there's no way the IRS is just going to go away of $700,000 worth of debt. Actually, I have 2 minutes left. I'd like to address the unclean hands. I think what the trial court did was unprecedented and went beyond the prior judgments in Nebraska, because the Bocheski case that was cited, the person was current or was way behind at the time he filed this action. Mr. Traister was current on his property division, his alimony, and his child support at the time he filed the complaint, and he was actually a month overpaid on alimony and child support for 13 months after the complaint. In fact, even up to the original trial date, he was still current. And in fact, his accrual actual earnings by the accountant, he paid more to appellee than his actual earnings by $65,000. Now, the one thing I'd like to address, too, is if the court had retroactively modified his child support and alimony and child support as they should have, he would have been overpaid at the time of trial. He fell slightly behind at the time of trial. But I would also like to address there's an erroneous timeline of the trial court. They focused on expenses that he made to his girlfriend during a time when he was still current on all of his obligations to say that he had unclean hands. So that was erroneous to use that timeline. And during the short period of time that he actually fell behind, if you look at the records, his girlfriend was putting more money into the account than she was taking out. And she was the one who was writing the checks. And the girlfriend, the evidence was that the money came from her child support. So the judge criticized him for paying her son's college tuition and other expenses. But by guess, that money came from her child support. So the unclean hands, I would say, is just plain error in this case. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Did I use all my rebuttal?
It looks like it.
Okay.
Good morning.
May it please support, counsel. My name is Megan Zobel, and I, along with Amy Martinez, represent the appellee in this matter, Linda Traister, who is watching this argument from her hometown of Aurora, Nebraska. The standard of review in this case allows for a review de novo on the record, but that the trial court's decision will be affirmed absent an abuse of discretion. That is an important hurdle for the appellant in this case. The trial court was present. She saw and heard the witnesses, assessed the credibility of Mr. Traister, and afforded the appropriate amount of weight his testimony presented. We urge this court to review the record in its entirety and pay special attention to Mr. Traister's credibility regarding a number of issues as laid out in our brief.
Let's start with, how do you respond to the appellant's argument that the financial crisis, if you will, was caused by the drop in grain prices?
We have no argument that there was a drop in grain prices. What we are arguing is that all of the decline in his income was voluntary on Mr. Traister's part. He continued to spend money throughout all of these times that he says that he was unable to make payments on bank loans and things like that and operating loans so that he could continue farming, yet continued to blow his money on unnecessary expenses. He had expenses.
But how he's spending his money is different from how much money he's earning, and if the crop prices went down, he's earning less.
Correct, and I understand that, but the money that he did have available to him, he could have put towards these operating loans, and he didn't. So he says that he did not have enough money to obtain these operating loans, so he had to give away these leases. He had to not farm as many grounds because of the drop in grain prices, and that, in turn, reduced his income-earning assets and his income. We believe that Mr. Traister has not demonstrated good cause for his material and substantial change in circumstances since the time of the decree, which would justify a modification of alimony and child support, and we would submit to you today that the court should affirm the trial court's ruling. As you know, a material change in circumstances in child support cases are analogous to good cause standard in alimony cases. So we're going to look at the modification of both together. Paying especially particular attention to Mr. Traister's bad faith motive for his modification request. As I stated before, we believe that Mr. Traister voluntarily reduced his income. We also believe that Mr. Traister has established that he has a high earning capacity. And we believe that Mr. Traister comes before you with unclean hands. As we discussed, Mr. Traister has voluntarily reduced his income. A petition for the modification or termination of alimony will be denied if the change in financial condition is due to fault, voluntary wastage, or dissipation of one's talents or assets. Mr. Traister, again, argues that his grain prices dropped. However, he does argue that the drop in grain prices resulted in a large reduction in his income that he earned from that farm ground, including 300 acres that he already knew he would not be releasing at the time of the divorce trial. And he agreed, again, to pay the amount of alimony and the amount of child support at the time of trial. And now he comes before you, erroneously arguing that this loss of acres should be included when considering whether there should be a modification of alimony and support. And he can't do that. Mr. Traister also voluntarily withdrew from a 12-year lease of, I believe, over 700 acres of income-earning assets to obtain a higher value on that property than it was awarded to him in the divorce. I believe the property was awarded to him somewhere around $200,000 in the divorce, and he turned around and sold it for over $600,000. During the time that Mr. Traister said that he could not afford to renew his operating loan for this leased property, he was blowing his money, again, on thousands of dollars worth of expenses, including personal services, dating websites, vacations, breast augmentation surgeries, numerous other expenses later on, again, for his girlfriend and her children as well. And finally, Mr. Tracer continues to voluntarily bind himself to what now can only be referred to as a hobby in farming, that he continues to argue is only putting him more in the red, yet he continues to farm. He is also in a career of trucking that he claims he is only making $5 an hour doing. And this leads us to our next argument, that he is capable of earning a lot more than what he has been making. The Nebraska Child Support Guidelines provides that applicable earning capacity may be considered in lieu of a parent's actual income and may include factors such as his work history, education, occupational skills, and job opportunities. And we believe that Mr. Tracer's work history and occupational skills lead to a result that he is capable of earning much more.
In that regard, I've noticed that there's been no argument either way with regard to the seed sales, and the evidence, as I recall, was he was making anywhere from $50,000 to $70,000 a year in seed sales, working 10 to 15 hours a week.
Right, Your Honor.
Is there any evidence that he could have simply just done that full time?
Well, the evidence we have is that he did apply for, I believe, four different positions in a matter of about 3 years, all with Pioneer Seeds.
Okay, so he applied for other positions, but so the position he had, was it limited to what, I mean, did he not, he had no real ability to earn more than that with the position he had than what he was doing?
And I do not recall from the record before it. I was not trial counsel, so after reviewing the record thoroughly, I don't recall whether there was additional testimony and whether he could work, say, 40 hours a week doing that, making much more, considering he was only making 5 to 10 hours a week, making anywhere between $50,000 and $70,000, depending on the year. But we would certainly argue that business he does well in, he has been successful in that, and that should be included in the argument that he is capable of earning much more than he is earning, say, working, farming, where he's now reduced his acres so much where there's no way he's going to be making money farming, yet he continues to do it. And then trucking, where he says he's working 78 to 80 hours a week, yet only making $5 an hour, putting him at, I believe, $20,000 a year annually. Yet I think his expenses from the year leading up to the trial in trucking was $25,000. So that puts him negative $5,000 in the hole, and he continues to do that. And he says that's his full-time job. And then he, of course, has a seed sales business that is doing great, but he's only working 10 to 15 hours doing that. We believe that the trial court said it right. It is not apparent that Mr. Tracer's financial troubles are due solely to circumstances out of his control. He is not maintaining a career path that provides him income, but instead continues to act in bad faith by continually changing career paths without giving a thought to his court-ordered obligations to Ms. Tracer and his daughter.
Can you address Mr. Philman's point that at the time he filed for relief, he was current in all obligations, and how can we apply an unclean hands doctrine to that?
Right, and I do believe that he was current at the time of filing. He was not, however, current at the time of the trial. He was behind, and I don't recall how much behind, but he was behind in both alimony and child support payments and owed a large sum of money on his property settlement judgment as well at the time of trial. Although Mr. Tracer argues that his dire financial expenses paint a different picture, in 2013 and 2015, he was spending thousands of dollars on purchases he could not account for, sometimes as much as $15,000 monthly. Instead of working out ways to pay the debt on the money he had available to him, he chose to blow that money. He chose to sell his income-earning assets and then try to come to court saying he can't pay because he now no longer makes as much as he is making and he doesn't have a way of making that much. Like the court in Wachewski, he is able-bodied, he is capable of making more than he is making, capable of being employed, and capable of paying child support and alimony. Unfortunately, when he is working, he decides to pay others. He decides to pay for his girlfriend. He decides to pay for her children's living expenses. He decides to pay, I believe it was somewhere around $40-some thousand dollars on a private investigator He decides to spend his money on remodeling his home. All sorts of things that he decided to do on his own volition instead of paying his wife, his ex-wife, I'm sorry, and his daughter. And although we understand that he has a new family, and I believe he cited that, he feels that he is responsible for taking care of his new family. He has a first obligation to his first wife and to his daughter, and he is not making those court-ordered obligations and not paying, and choosing not to do so.
And the daughter is now the age of majority, isn't she?
You may be right, Your Honor. I apologize. I do not know the answer to that as of today. In summary, the case is all about choices. Tim Traister had the choice to enter into a voluntary agreement that was originally accepted by the trial court. He then made a voluntary choice to reduce his income-earning assets. He decided to change his career and reduce his income. And then he made a voluntary choice to pay for others' expenses instead of his court-ordered obligations. And this is all consistent with the same situation he found himself in at the time of the original decree. We respectfully request that this court affirm the trial court's decision in its entirety.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And there's no rebuttal time, so the matter is submitted. Thank you. You're excused.